My boy coming in about 2 minutes. You want to be elsewhere. I gave the platoon the order to move out fast. We didn't make too much noise, but enough. The sniper woke up and fired a burst at Lou, who was bringing up the rear on the left flank. It was a pretty sophisticated anti-soldier boy weapon. Explosive rounds with depleted uranium punchers, probably. Two or three rounds hit Lou about waist level and blew out his leg control. As he fell over backward, another one blew off his right arm. He hit the ground with a jarring crash, and for a moment everything was still, the high leaves over him rustling in the morning breeze. Another round exploded into the ground next to his head, showering his eyes with dirt. He shook his head to clear them.
"Lou, we can't do a pickup. Get out of there except for eyes and ears."
"Thanks, Julian." Lou jacked out, and the warning signal pains from his back and arms stopped. He was just a camera, pointed at the sky. We were most of a kilometer away when the flyboy screamed overhead. I linked to her through command and got a strange double view. From above the forest canopy, a spreading blossom of napalm shot through with glittering, streaking sparkles, hundreds of thousands of flechettes. On the ground, a sudden sheet of fire overhead that dripped down through the branches, loud splintering crackle as the flechettes tore through the forest. Sonic boom, and then silence. Then a man screaming, and another one talking to him in low tones, and one shot that ended the screaming. A man ran by, close but out of sight, and threw a grenade at the soldier boy. It bounced off the chest and exploded harmlessly. The napalm dripped, and flames from the underbrush licked up toward it. Monkeys screamed at the fire. Lou's eyes flickered twice and went out. As we moved away from the inferno, two more flyboys came in low and dropped fire retardant. It was an ecological preserve, after all, and the napalm had done all we wanted it to. As we approached the PZ, command said they'd calculated a body count of 4, our sniper and both of the men, plus 1 for whoever else might have been there, and gave 3 of them to the flyboy and split 1 among us. Park didn't like that at all, since there wouldn't have been a sortie if he hadn't spotted the sniper, and she would have been easy kill if I hadn't ordered otherwise. I advised him to hold that in. He was on the verge of a public tantrum that would leak up to command and force an Article 15. Pro forma company-level punishment for petty insubordination. As I shot that warning to him, I had to think how much easier it must be to be a shoo. You can hate your sergeant and smile at him at the same time. The PZ was obvious without the radio beacon, the denuded dome of a hill that had been cleaned up recently with a controlled burn and blast. As we picked our way up the muddy ashes of the hillside, 2 flyboys came in and hovered protectively. Not a normal fast snatch. The cargo helicopter came in and landed, or at least hovered a foot off the ground while the rear door slammed down to form an unsteady ramp. We scrambled aboard to join 20 other soldier boys. My opposite number in Fox Platoon was Barbu Sieves. We'd worked together before. I had a double week linked to her, through command and through Rose, who had replaced Ralph as horizontal liaison. By way of greeting, Barbu projected a multisensory image of carne asada, a meal we'd shared at the airport a few months ago. "Anybody tell you anything?" I asked.
"I am but a mushroom."
That military joke was old when my father heard it. They keep me in the dark and feed me bullshit. The chopper was rising and tilting as soon as the last soldier boy dove in off the ramp. We all sort of crashed around, getting acquainted. I didn't really know Charlie's platoon leader, David Grant. Half of his platoon had been replaced in the past year. 2 stroked out, and the others temporarily reassigned for psychological adjustment. David had only been in command for 2 cycles. I helloed him, but at first he was busy with his platoon, trying to calm down a couple of Neos who were afraid we were going into a kill situation. With luck, we wouldn't be. When the door slammed shut, I got an outline of the general order, which was basically a parade or show of force in an urban area that was due for a reminder that we see all, know all. It was the El Norte section of Liberia, which, oddly enough, had both guerrilla activity and a high concentration of Anglos. They were a mixture of older Americans who had retired to Costa Rica, and the children and grandchildren of earlier retirees. The Pedros thought that the presence of a lot of gringos would protect them. We were supposed to demonstrate otherwise. But if the enemy stayed out of sight, there wouldn't be any problems. Our orders were to use force only reactively. So we were to be both bait and hook. It didn't look like a good situation. The rebels in Guanacaste province had been faring badly and needed their own demonstration. I supposed command had taken that into account. We picked up some riot control accessories, extra gas grenades, and a couple of Tanglefoot projectors. They spray out a skein of sticky string that makes it impossible to walk. After 10 minutes, it suddenly evaporates. We were also issued extra concussion grenades, though I'm not sure they're a good idea with civilians. Blow out somebody's eardrums and expect him to be grateful you didn't do worse? None of the riot control weapons are pleasant, but that's the only one that does permanent damage. Unless you're staggering around blinded by tear gas and get run over by a truck, or breathe VA and choke on vomit. We came in over the city at treetop level, lower than many of the buildings. Helicopter and 2 flyboys in tight, slow formation, loud as 3 banshees. I suppose that was good psychology. Show we're not afraid, and at the same time rattle their windows. But again, I wondered whether we weren't set out as tempting bait. If somebody fired at us, I had no doubt the sky could be full of flyboys in a few seconds. The enemy must have figured that out, too. Once on the ground and out of the chopper, the 29 soldier boys could easily destroy the city themselves without air support. Part of our show was going to be a public service demonstration, a block of tenements to be raised. We could save the city a lot of construction or deconstruction expense. Just walk in and pull things down. We sat down gently on the town square, flyboys hovering, and disembarked into a parade formation, 10 by 3, -1. Only a scattering of people were there to watch us, which surprised no one. A few curious children and defiant teenagers and old people who live in the park. Only a few police. Most of the force, it turned out, was waiting down by our demonstration area. The buildings surrounding the square were late colonial architecture, graceful in the shadow of the glass and metal geometries that hovered over them. The blind, reflective windows of those modern buildings could conceal a city full of watchers, maybe snipers. As we marched off in robotic lockstep, I was, more than ever, aware of the fact that I was a safe puppeteer a couple of 100 miles away. If rifles did appear in each window and started firing, no actual people would be killed. Until we retaliated. We broke step in a carefully random rolling gait as we crossed an old bridge, so as not to be embarrassed by shaking it apart and falling into the noisome trickle below, and then went back to the slam, slam, slam that was supposed to be so intimidating. I did see a dog run away. If any humans were being terrorized along our route, they were doing it indoors. Past the postmodern anonymity of downtown, we went through a few blocks of a residential neighborhood, presumably upper-class dwellings, all hidden behind tall whitewashed walls. Watchdogs howled at our echoing steps, and in several places we were tracked by surveillance cameras. Then we got into the barrios. I always felt a kind of referred sympathy for the people who lived in these circumstances, here and in Texas, so similar to the American black ghettos that I had avoided by accident of birth. I also knew that there were sometimes compensations, family and neighborhood bonds, that I never experienced. but I could never be sentimental enough to consider that a reasonable trade-off for my longer life expectancy, higher life expectations. I turned down my olfactory receptors a notch. Smell of standing sewage and urine starting to steam in the morning sun. There was also the good smell of corn baking, and good strong peppers, and somewhere a chicken roasting slowly. Maybe a celebration. A chicken was not an everyday menu item here. You could hear the crowd several blocks before we got to the demonstration site. We were met by 24 mounted police, mounted on horses, who formed a protective V or U around us. It made you wonder who was demonstrating what. Nobody pretended that the party in power represented the actual will of the people. It was a police state, and there was no question whose side we were on. I suppose it didn't hurt to reinforce that every now and then. There must have been 2,000 people milling around the demolition site. It was obvious we were moving into a pretty complicated political situation. There were signs and banners proclaiming, "Actual people live here," and "Robot puppets of rich landowners," and so forth. More signs in English than in Spanish, for the cameras. But there were a lot of Anglos in the crowd, too, retirees showing their support for the locals. Anglos who were locals. I asked Barbu and David to halt their platoons in place for a minute and sent a query up to command. "We're being used here, and it looks like a potentially bad situation."
"That's why you were issued all the extra riot gear," she said. "This crowd's been gathering since yesterday."
"But this isn't our job," I said. "It's like using a sledgehammer to swat a fly."
"There are reasons," she said. "And you have orders. Just be careful."
I relayed that to the others.
"Be careful?" David said. "Of us hurting them, or them hurting us?"
"Just try not to step on anybody," Barbu said.
"I'd go further," I said. "Don't injure or kill anybody to save the machines." Barbu agreed.
"That's a corner the rebels may try to back us into. Stay in control of the situation."
Command was listening.
"Don't be too conservative. This is a show of force."
It started out well. A young Ender, who'd been standing on a box, haranguing, suddenly jumped off and ran over to stand in the way of our progress. One of the mounted police touched him on the bare back with a cattle prod, which knocked him down and threw him into a trembling seizure at David's feet. David stopped dead, and the soldier boy behind him, distracted by something, ran into him with a crash. It would have been perfect if David had fallen over and crushed the helpless fanatic, but at least we were spared that. Some of the crowd laughed and jeered. Not a bad response under the circumstances. And they spirited the unconscious man away. That might protect him for a day, but I'm sure the police knew his name, address, and blood type.
"Straighten up the ranks and files," Barbu said. "Let's keep moving and get this over with."
The block we were supposed to demolish was identified with a girdle of orange spray paint. Hard to miss, anyhow, since a solid square of police and sawhorses kept the crowd a neat 100 meters away on all four sides. We didn't want to use explosives more powerful than the 2-inch grenades, with the rockets, for instance. Individual fragments of brick could go a lot farther than 100 meters with the force of a bullet. But I queried for a calculation and got permission to use the grenades to weaken the building's foundations. They were 6-story concrete slab constructions with crumbling brick facades, less than 50 years old, but the work had been done with such inferior concrete, too much sand in the mixture, and one building had already collapsed, killing dozens. So it didn't sound like a big deal to bring them down. Grenades to jar things loose at the foundation, then put a soldier boy at each corner to push and pull,
putting torsion on the framework structure, and